right with you. I guess they were pointing at her. Would you like to be held up for ridicule?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind.
Okay, would you stand up in the aisle
okay.
here?
Okay. Wow.
Well, I guess we all can see why they...
But he has little bells
little
on his
bells
shoes.
On his
no
shoes.
No wonder
there.
He's being held up for ridicule.
This, what's the reason for this, sir?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of an attention-getting device. Plus, when I can always get a seat in the subway. When the doors swing open, I step on with these shoes with bells on. Everybody gets right out of that car, and I have it all along.
I can well imagine.
All by myself.
Well, thanks for coming here today, and I hope you enjoyed the show. We've just been given the signal that we have an extra minute in the show right here. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to play 1 minute, please, the little game we have?
I'd be delighted to,
all
if
right.
I may.
You just come up here quickly, sir, and reach into the barrel for your subject and hand the slip of paper to me. And when you hear the signal, you'll start and talk for 1 minute. I'll time you, and I think we'll have a great deal of fun.
Okay.
Are you all ready?
Yes, this is very interesting.
You've got your the subject there. You hand it to me.
Okay, there you are. Yeah,
sure.
This subject is one word. Enferfment. Go ahead. 1 minute, please.
Enferfment. Well, sometimes when I...
Would you like me to spell it for you before you start? Would it help?
All right, yes.
Okay, we'll call time out here. Enferfement. Enferfment.
Time in. Thank you. The last time I saw an enferfment, I don't believe I was out of... Hold on.
45 seconds now.
I have 45 seconds left to talk about enferfment.
Enferfment is a better pronunciation of it.
What?
Enferfment.
Enferfment. My boss had an enferfment once, and...
I just had a correction handed to me. I think I to give you, in all fairness, the word is spelled E-N-F-O-E-F-F-M-E-N-T. The double F is on the second appearance of the letter F.
Doesn't help me at all.
Doesn't help.
And he had to be on his feet a lot that time, and the doctor told him he should be off his feet. And
15 seconds.
Perfment. No such word, wise guy.
Yes, there is.
No, there is not.
Well, I'm going to call timeout. You did kill the 1 minute, sir, but I'm afraid you didn't qualify quite for the prize, but you did have fun at it, didn't you?
No, I don't think there's such a word.
Well, will you get him a dictionary to take away with him on his way back from the show? I think you speak to that little fellow at the back of the aisle.
You're in time. You're at the Paul and Ray Show that presents the great Central American tightrope walker. A gentleman who, as I understand, is chairman of the Statehood for British Honduras Committee 2. He's here to publicize that. The great and wonderful Senor Miguel Honduras.
Thank you, Ray. And it is a very great pleasure to be appearing here on you.
To be appearing here on the program. Well, now, as I understand, senor, you have the rope strung. I guess you can all see that.
It is strung in the loose rope fashion today.
That's right. Oh, you're not going to do the tight rope. This is what they call the slack rope.
Slack wire.
And this is,
I think... much practice to it.
I think this is more difficult, really, than the tight rope, isn't it?
When I climb down the tight rope, it is a different feeling, you understand, than climbing down the slack wire.
You put on weight, senor, since the last
thing? Just a few pounds.
See. Well, you're all set to go. I wonder
Wait just a minute. Poopy, are you ready with the guitar? My guitarist, Poopy, is going to play for me today.
Poopy will play the...
See.
The guitar.
Play all over the guitar.
Well, I guess maybe you're all set to go. Here, let me hold your serape.
Oh, yes. I climbed the steps now. You describe the...
Well, the senor is wearing tight-fitting clothes that you usually associate with a tight or slack rope walker. He's saying hello now, and he's going to the top of the ladder. Then he's stepping out on the rope. He's now testing the slackness of the rope. Is that slack enough?
See, it's very slack.
It's very slack, which means that it's all set for him.
Here I go.
Good. And now the senor is starting out on the rope. I might point out it's about 60 feet long, the studio, so he should go 60 feet.
Why you look so sad, Poopy? Long face on it.
Senor. Senor.
Yes?
Could you do the rest of the act backwards?
Si. Si.
difficult to turn in the middle of this slack wire.
Well, I know it is, but actually, it'll be a more daring act that way, and it's almost a necessity that you do that. It's more dangerous, I grant.
I'm teetering back and forth. How near am I to the end?
You're more than halfway now. You're more than... Senor?
Only.
Senor Honduras?
Only.
Senor?
Hey.
Can I help you up, or...
Yeah.
Or do you want to stay there for a while?
I just rest here.
Why don't you stay there for a little while?
For a moment.
Senor Honduras.
I see I'm going to get built up again.
Mm-hmm. Fortunate. What happened, as I review it now...
But he's too heavy for the act, anyway.
Well, yes, plus the rope. He was no sooner out on the rope than I noticed that it was giving way at the other end.
Yeah.
Was,
awful sorry about that, Miguel, but when you get back on your feet, why, come up and see us. We're always ready to give you a show business break.
We're always here to talk with you.
Hello again, this is Tom Lowell, your world-renowned travel man, here to answer travel questions sent in by listeners on This, the World of Travel. Are you ready with the questions, Ben?
Yes, I'm all set, Mr.
And the first question, please.
When traveling on a train, is it a good idea to sit over the wheels?
Well, it chafes a bit, but if the average traveler is hardy and doesn't mind the discomfort, why not? Go ahead and sit over the wheels.
I'm sorry, are you through?
Yes.
Is Dodge City safe these days?
I don't think a vacationer would have to worry about that then, except when there's a cattle drive going through town, and at such times, some of the men in the cattle drive get a little ornery and smash up a few of the cocktail lounges in the area.
But there are no shoot-ups or anything like
no.
that?
No. The old law whereby the sheriff had to give each newcomer to town a pistol is no longer in effect.
Good. Mr. Lowell, if a person wanted to relax and live to a ripe old age... where would he go and what would he do?
Well, Ben, if I wanted to live to a ripe old age, I'd probably spend 6 months on each of the Thousand Islands.
I see. Well, now, with atomic-powered passenger lines being built these days, liners, that is, how will a traveler be able to distinguish between the atomic vessels and the standard passenger liners now in service?
Well, the best way to find out what kind of power a ship is using is to watch the crew around sailing time. They abandon ship. It's a pretty safe bet the vessel is using atomic power.
Right. And is the Trombone Festival in Stanchard, Maine, anything to see?
Yes, it's something to see, all right. Especially the Grand March, with 7,600 trombones being played at once. But I would warn the vacationer, with 7,600 men pushing those sliding things back and forth on the trombones, they'll cut down everything in front of them. Don't get in their way.
I see. Well, now let's see. Maybe one more question, Mr. Lowell. Could you tell us something about the Sweet Music Festival?
Yes. As always, held at the Bubbling Springs, New York, and if any of you listeners out there decide to visit the Sweet Music Festival, please say hello to the festival's gracious new hostess, domestic champagne woman, Laura Lee Williams. Congratulate her.
Thank you, Mr. Law. I think we're running out of time, but you come back next week, you hear? We have several questions that we want to ask you.
I'll do that, Ben.
Thank you, and so long for now.
Keep smiling.
Who does he call Ben, anyway?
His announcer, I guess.
Oh.
Yes, we're here to help you, the ordinary employee, with our Bob and Ray employment problems on the Employment Service of the Air. And it's our hope we can dip into our extensive files and come up with a better tomorrow for you people seated on the hardwood bench. But the first job seeker, please step up.
Hello, Elliot.
Could I have your name and occupation, sir, please?
I'm Scarf Johnson, barnstormer and crop duster. You got a job for me?
Well, not so fast, Johnson. Do you own your own plane?
Yeah, I own a Spad. What do you have in mind?
Well, if my memory serves me correctly, there's a kennel 3 miles north of Jamestown, New York, and the owner of the kennel, Mr. Ogden, would like to have the whole place dusted with flea powder.
Well, I've mass powdered before, Elliot. When does he want this job done?
Well, it's not that easy now. Mr. Ogden would like to interview you first and see if you're the right man for the job, Johnson.
Well, I've had plenty of spraying experience, so...
Well, you still have to see Mr. Ogden before the job is secured, and I'd like to give you a few interview tips.
All right, we'll shoot, Elliot.
Well, when you're in his office, don't lean on his desk while you're talking to him. They hate that.
Who?
Any prospective employer.
Okay. See, I'll write that down in my logbook. And I'll remember that when I see this guy Ogden.
And call him Mr. Ogden, because familiarity breeds contempt. You're not going there to be a pal. You're after a job.
Yeah.
So be as friendly as you can, but at the same time, be as remote as possible. You think you can do that, Johnson?
Well, I think I can handle it, Elliot. Yeah, I'll talk to him from behind the closed door of his office.
Now, that might not be a bad idea, but I think you should enter Mr. Ogden's office.
Okay, I'll go in and then turn my back to him. We'll chat that
good,
way.
Good. Now, you'll have to get longer puttees. The ones you're wearing only go halfway up your legs, and prospective employers are always concerned about neatness.
Well, now, these are the only puttees I own, and if I roll them all the way up to my knees, there'll be spaces showing, you know. I have some ball players' knee-length stockings I could wear.
Don't you have any boots, Johnson?
I did have, but my Batman, Corporal Rollins, stole them several years ago.
Maybe you'd be better off just to wear oxfords and socks with clocks on them. That'll look neat, huh?
Will do then, Elliot. Okay.
And, how did your swagger stick get bent, Johnson? Mr. Ogden will notice that right off.
Well, it got bent for many years of slapping it against my thigh. You can see here where my right thigh is worn away a little.
Yeah. Well, I hope Mr. Ogden won't notice that. We can do something about it, though. When you enter Mr. Ogden's office, kind of walk sideways, kind of, you know.
Oh, wait a minute. You mean sidle in? Left side featured? That it, Elliot?
That's it.
Yeah.
Feature your left side.
Right.
And that's about it, Johnson. After you sign several employment agency papers here, you can be on your way to Jamestown.
And how much am I going to get for the job, you know, Elliot?
Well, it's piecework. We're going to charge by the dog. If you get the job, see that your aim is good, Johnson. The rest of you folks on the hardwood bench go home. Go back after we've had a chance to study our extensive Bob and Ray employment file.
We're going to play the Wally Ballou tape, the one that he made when he visited the laboratory of Matthew E. Pulsifer. Okay, let it roll.
Speaking from the laboratory of Dr. Matthew E. Pulsifer, and about set for our first look at Dr. Pulsifer's invention, the Fact Datatron. Doctor, I wonder if you could give us a little background material on the machine that we're going to see demonstrated very presently here.
Now, what I do here is I can feed certain information and data to this machine.
Uh-huh.
And then the machine more or less digests this information that I feed it. And it gives you your answer within certain limitations.
Well, I mean, would it answer any question I wanted to ask, or does it have that information within it?
No, that's one of the limitations. The questions have to be easy, something you could figure out in your own head.
One of the bugs you're trying to get out of it, I understand.
Yes, that's right.
So then, when the digested information is completed, it's returned on cards, I presume.
Please. It comes out through... Well, do you want to step over here?
I'll
show
maybe
you
that
the machine, Mr. Ballou.
Easiest place.
Well, right down here is where the answer will come out. In here is where I feed the information, the data I was speaking about.
Well, do you do that before or after the question is asked?
You do it before.
Before.
And then
well, you
want to
feed
it,
some information into it, or then I'll ask a question.
All right, well, let me open the door and I'll feed it the information.
Pulsifer is shoveling mounds of information into the machine, and I hear an electric current going on. Something is working in there.
Well, it's beginning to digest all that information, those two or three shovel folds that I just put in there.
Uh-huh. That should be enough to answer simple question.
That's working in good shape.
All right. Now... here's the question I'd like to ask the machine. Is it all ready?
The lights are on, so you ask it any question.
Right. If a person was born November 1st, 1955, say, how old would he be on November 1st, 1965? Guess he'd be 10 years old, I
suppose. Well, let's see what the machine says.
Well, it's 55 to 65. What's that mean? There's a card coming out of the side of the machine.
It said, 11? Question mark.
Well, the answer is 10, I'm sure of that.
Well, I'm going to put some more information in there anyway.
Maybe it didn't have enough facts to show our
destiny. Yeah. I'll put plenty of information in this time, and then you can ask it a question. That's very good. That's easy for it, too.
It seemed like an easy question.
Yes, that's a nice easy question. All right, now.
You want me to change it?
No. Well, yes. Kind of.
All right. Let me get
that. Wait a second. Let it digest this information, please.
All right,
now,
ready now?
Yes, it's ready to go.
All right, right. Here's a tip off. How old am I this year?
Now, let's see. 15 says.41 question mark? No. Well, there's another card coming out. 28? No. 35? No. It's getting warmer, though. 41? No. It guessed that before. Said that once before. Yeah. It likes that. 59? No. 10? No, no.
That was the answer to the first question. Is it extrapolating now?
Mr. Malone, you can stay here a little longer with me if you want. I'm going to go upstairs.
All right, this is Radio's Wally Malone from the laboratory of Matthew E. Palmer.
Word Carr is out in Hollywood right now. He's talking with, you remember Barry Campbell, the famous movie star who's appeared on our show numberless times. He is out there now filming the new movie, If Pain Persists. And Word Carr is standing by now, all set to interview Barry on the set. Come in, please. Word Carr.
Thank you, Bob and Ray. Word Carr speaking on the set of If Pain Persists. And I'm talking with Barry Campbell, the star of the picture, and in just a moment we're going to watch one of the crucial scenes being shot. Barry, this is the charge of the cavalry scene, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
I see all of the horses and the extras are lined up over there.
Well, this, the extras number about 1,100 is a tremendous cavalry charge here.
Certainly an expensive scene we're about to see put on film.
That's right. I'm a lieutenant in the 5th Field Flank of this, this particular cavalry outfit.
Stand by, everybody!
Oh, I'm going to...
Get those extras over there with them horses!
We're going to shoot a...
Everybody go when I say go!
We have a rather important scene right now. A lot of action, very little of you.
All right, Barry, well, you just go over it. We'll follow with our microphone and listen.
Ready on the set. All you extras, the horses ready. Charge! Speak. Action. Camera.
Father Ferguson, you're the first Ferguson in the 5th Field Flank to fail to fulfill the fundamental functions of a field flank front runner.
Really, Brisby, that's an awfully frequent...
Hold it! Get the horses back!
Sorry, I'm sorry.
That's okay, Campbell. We don't make mistakes. We'll try it again.
Tongue twister.
Got all the horses lined up on the other side, the extras...
Horses are okay, yeah!
Talk, speak, action,
camera!
I knew your father, Ferguson. You're the first Ferguson in the 5th Field Flank to fail to fulfill the fundamental functions of a field flank front runner.
Well, Frisbee, that's a fragrant front runner.
Come on, Campbell.
Well, I'm sorry, sir.
We'll get the extras and the horses back
see,
there.
I say, Colonel Frisbee, that's a filthy, fragrant falsehood.
All you say is, Colonel Frisbee, that's a filthy, flagrant falsehood.
Bob and Ray...
All right.
Bob and Ray's an officer.
Action.
Turn it back right away.
This is Word Carr.
And back here just in time, too. Gee, that was exciting.
And it's off to Hollywood now for another progress report on the filming of the new Barry Campbell Western extravaganza film, If Pain Persists. And here's our correspondent there, Word Carr.
Word Carr speaking. They're ready now to resume shooting on If Pain Persists. Take 75 is just about to get underway. Barry Campbell has spent the night going over his lines. And the
Colonel
actor
Frisbee.
Who will play the Colonel has... perhaps you can hear Barry in the background as he...
Colonel Frisbee, that's a filthy, fragrant falsehood.
As he goes over a last-minute check of the line that he will speak to the Colonel after the onrush of the cavalry by the Colonel's tent. A scene like this, I was told by the director, costs $20,000 every time the camera rolls. And they've reloaded the film.
Stand by!
14 times. There's the signal to stand by.
Colonel Frisbee, that's a
We've done this thing 75
it's
times.
It's a tongue twister.
Get the horses back there.
I know this is kind of a tough scene. I know you've been working all day on it, but we got to get it before the sun goes down.
Look, I'm a nervous wreck, sir. Is there some
pretty bum actor too, Campbell.
That's beside the point now. To me, this is impossible. It's a tongue twister, a spoonerism that I just cannot utter.
Look, Campbell, all you say is, Colonel Frisbee, that's a filthy, flagrant falsehood. Let me hear you say it.
Colonel Frisbee, that's a filthy, flagrant falsehood.
Right. Now, what's so difficult about that, Campbell?
I don't know what it is. The minute that I see the cameras rolling, I don't know. It's just the combination of flagrant and fragrant and falsehood somehow.
That's the way it's written, Campbell.
Can we change the colonel's name?
I want to try this just once more. If you don't get it this time, then we'll rewrite the thing.
This is take 75.
Action!
I knew your father, Ferguson, and you're the first Ferguson in the 5th Field Flank to fail to fulfill the fundamental functions of a Field Flank front runner.
Falsely, filthy! This is a fragrant...
Falsely!
You're right, Campbell. We got a...
The false.
Bring their horses back.
I can't even say my name now, Director.
All right, quiet down now.
That's so funny.
Everybody's under a strain. I do see the humor in it.
$1 million worth of boots here.
We got time for about one more take. How about if you start the scene, Campbell? Come in and say something like, did you call for me, Colonel Frisbee? Or...
I think maybe that would do it. I'd come in, rather than the colonel speaking first, I'd say,
right.
Did you want to see me, Colonel Frisbee? Then he could give that speech.
That's what I was thinking.
All right, I think you.
You got that, Colonel?
Yes.
All right.
Everybody ready? Speak! Action! Action!
Camera! Did you want to see me, Colonel Frisbee?
Good. Wonderful, Campbell.
Oh. Good! What are you doing, Colonel?
Well, I'm sorry. I just completely forgot. I was so surprised at the clean, straight line coming out of Campbell there.
Well, I'm sorry.
My apologies, Campbell, for ruining your scene. Well, I guess we better knock off for the day with... Finish it off tomorrow.
All right.
This is Word Carr again. I'm going to try to get a few words from Barry Campbell before returning it. Barry, over here for the radio.
Oh, hi.
Had rather a trying day, didn't you?
Trying is
Do you think it'll be any easier in the morning?
Well, possibly a night's sleep.
Oh, yeah. Well, you'd better get a good night's rest.
Right.
And we'll be back here on the set tomorrow morning.
Good.
And now, this is...
I am truly, really, really got tired.
This is Word Carr, returning it now.
Thank you, Word. That would really be something to see when they get that scene finished, if they ever do.
Webley, you got a book review for today?
Yeah.
And we kind of like to round up one of the big books and... have your players give us a scene.
Okay, it'll only take about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, this particular book. It's 2 cents word.
For 2 cents plain.
Right. And the wonderful book, I thought very much. And the Wesley Webster players are in Studio 24 at this very moment, waiting for the blinking light to go on to indicate...
I'll tell you, the blinking light is broken.
Oh.
And we're going to fix the blinking thing just as soon as we
yell
can.
Yell down through the ventilators. Tell them to go on the air that they're all set.
Okay.
As we're looking at them, we're about 2 days at sea. You hear... All right, signal them. Clear!
Aye, aye, sir. I can't get over how pleasant you're seeing today.
The white caps at death sing against the blue background.
Watch out for that boom, Captain. The boom is heading your way. Oh, that's too bad, sir. Let me help you up. There we are, up, Sir Daisy.
Why?
Taking it easy.
I don't you keep a civil tongue in your head when you're talking to the captain of this tongue.
Look how quick the boom is swinging back. Let me help you up, sir.
Well, matey, Why don't you go get two glasses and we'll each have a draft of the captain's port, eh?
You mean you're inviting me to join you, sir?
Why not, matey?
Yeah.
How could I run a good tub without you?
Kind of surprised at your attitude, sir. You know, look out for the boom. It's swinging back, Captain. Oh, that's worse than the other two.
What do you do with the captain's port in your hand?
Will you... I figure we're just... Look out for the boom, Captain!
Well, why don't you fill the glasses up full?
Well, you just smacked me one, Captain. You...
Oh, well, no, I'm sorry about that.
You mean you want me to join you now?
No more of that, maybe, yes.
That's it. 2 cent plane.
I don't remember that scene. And...
Not only was that scene not in that book, but the book is fairly old. Webb, we don't like this kind of work. We'd like to see you in the office right away.
Well, okay, then. I just thought that maybe once in a while you'd like to hear, sir. I'll be right there.
Today, just before we went on the air, we were conducting a search, as is our... Walt, for the skinniest man in the audience.
And our close friend, Mr. J.J. Kinney, manager of the Bingler Brothers Circus, asked us to keep an eye open for a man who might possibly be interested in being shot from a bow three times daily, four times on Saturday.
We found a man, but we also found a story. So for the time being, Mr. J.J. Kinney will just have to wait.
That's right. Incidentally, did you know that Kinney was the first man to use a ringmaster without a mustache?
No, I didn't. Did it work out?
I'm afraid not. You see, without the mustache, the ringmaster had no authority at all, and he used to whip the clowns for laughing at him and everything.
Well, look, I hate to interrupt, but I think we've been keeping our guest waiting too long here. Sir, would you tell us your name, please?
Merle M. Garland.
Now, Merle, would you tell our audience why you are so skinny?
Well, I'm skinny because I lost my food dining club credit card, and I'm not eating too well because of the mishap. That's why.
Well, sir, I don't mean to become maudlin. I don't want to offend you, but if you haven't been eating regularly, perhaps we here...
Oh, thank you kindly, Mr. Elliott, for the offer you were about to make. But I've got plenty of cash money. It's just that the restaurants here won't accept cash. Yes. Only credit cards. Money's too much of a bother, I was told.
I know. Well, how did you lose your food dining club credit card, Mr. Garland?
Well, actually, I was held up and my wallet was taken from me.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, I was hoping the crook would overlook the credit cards in the wallet and just take the $14,000 I had in it, but no luck. He took the cards and left me the money.
Well, Mr. Garland, when you say cards, did you have more than one credit card?
I had dozens. The only one I've got left now is my air transport credit club card. I took the precaution of painting it so it would look like a $100 bill, and the crook overlooked it.
Can I ask you how you're managing to stay alive without a food credit card?
Well, I use my air transport credit club card. I had to fly to Copenhagen last week so I could get served a meal on the plane.
What were you served, Mr. Garland?
Beef and noodles.
Mm-hmm.
But that was last month, and I'm hungry again, so I made a reservation on a plane for the night. Going to Australia, so I'll be served two meals.
Yeah.
Australia's pretty far.
Oh, I'm certain it is, but if you can't hold out until then, I know of an airline that flies from Larchmont to Scarsdale. It's a two-minute trip, and you get served an orange section en route.
No, I think I'll wait for the whole meal, Mr.
Well, suit yourself. Now, do you want to describe your food dining club credit card to our listeners in the event it turns up somewhere?
Well, it's 2.5 by 3. It's blue and yellow, and there's a picture of two halves of a hamburger bun, slightly separated, where my name goes, Merle N. Garland, between the hamburger bun.
Uh-huh.
And the card is torn around the edges.
Guess it was an old card, huh?
No. You see, after I'd finish a meal at a restaurant, I'd rip off a piece of the card and give it to the waiter as a tip. You know how it is with waiters.
Yes, I do. I've been embarrassed a number of times when all I had to leave the waiter for a tip was money myself.
Well, I hope I get my card back.
Hope so, too, Mr. Garland. Meanwhile, air travel is a great broadener. And while all this may seem a nasty experience to you at the moment, you should be quite smart when you get squared away. And thanks for being with us, Skinny.
Say, have you been reading in the paper
about the bird fall off in New York?
Yeah, I did. It seems that Mount Vernon, New York, has been plagued by a flock
starlings.
Of starlings, and they engaged a gentleman at a pretty good price to...
I think $4,000 if he could get rid of all these starlings. And he goes uses two metal strips and pounds them together, and then he has a little gentle chime, and he says it has worked before. However, so far, it hasn't scared the starlings off permanently. They fly away when they hear him coming down the street, but then they come back after he's gone. But he says it may take three or four treatments before it's all over. It's been very interesting. Wally Ballou is up in Bronxville, and I think he has a follow-up story to all this bird talk. So come in, please, Wally Ballou.
Similar follow-up story here in Bronxville, where we are about to chat with a gentleman who has been engaged for the same purpose, to rid some of the townspeople of some of these birds. This right now is a veritable birdwatcher's paradise. Birds of all type and description are making themselves available to the watchers. You may hear a lady guide over to my right who is identifying some of the birds for the people in her group.
Baltimore Oriole.
She just pointed out the Baltimore Oriole. And a while back, we saw a ruby throated hummingbird.
It's wood thrush.
There's a wood thrush just...
Come on, lady, let's go.
Out of the bush.
Come on, lady, let's get these birds out of here.
Here's the gentleman we came to...
All right, let's go. Come on, birds.
Would you, sir, tell us how you're faring and getting the birds out of...
Well, I use a different system. I don't use any metal clanking or bells or chimes or guns or anything. I just yell them out of the trees and tell them to head off.
Could we have a sample of...
better.
Could we have a sample of how you work? Or...
All right. Well,
is it
that
too
is...
early?
Now, you see this one tree up here? It looks like a pin oak. Now, you notice
yeah.
there's a bunch of starlings up
yeah.
there. Now, I think they're down from Mount Vernon.
I see. You're going to try to head them back that way?
I don't care where they go, just as long as they leave Bronxville.
All right. Well, now we'll hear a bird chaser as he goes to work.
Okay, get out of here! Come on! Come on, bird! Hit the road! Let's go! Hey, come on!
Well, it seems to be working.
Don't get me mad, buddy! Let's go!
He's shooing the birds out of the tree.
Hey, you want one
still one left there.
White guy. Come on, I see you! Come on.
He's telling the bird he sees it.
Come on, get out of there now!
There it goes. I think you've been successful, sir. And they did head back in the direction of Mount Vernon.
Well, they can have him back there. We don't want him here in Bronxville.
Where's your next job? Are you lined up for another engagement?
From here, I'm going to California. A lot of birds out there.
Busy season out there,
yeah.
huh? Well, good luck, sir. Certainly your work is here.
Cut out for me.
For the birds. And now this
is... Wait a minute, there's one there still.
Well, we can't wait. You may be here all night. This is Radio's Wally Ballou, returning it now to...
Thank you, Wally, for an interesting sidelight to the bird story.
Hey, hear ye, the Bob and Ray unrehearsed courtroom of the air is now in session.
You'll be hearing unrehearsed courtroom dramas involving live actors who will be doing away with the technical know-how of real-life judges, genuine lawyers, legitimate district attorneys, and the rest of those tedious law people with years and years of solid knowledge. And now, Superior Court 3, County of Henderson, Superior Court Judge Presser presiding.
So, my good man, I have no recourse but to sentence you to not more than one or more than 20, no more than 20 and far less than one. Well, that's not it. And so, my good chap, you're going to get a flat 15 years. Hey, P.I. Silence. Hear any more noise? I'll have another demonstration. I have a few words to say to the prisoner before I remand him to the custody of the country, city. Silence! Silence! Speak up, Bailey.
It's Bailiff, not Bailey. I got something to tell you.
Well, if the Bailey has a complaint, he can see me in my personal chamber later on. Now I have a few words to say to the prisoner.
No, kid, not. You ought to listen to me, really.
Prisoner, 15 years is a long time, but you deserve it. Never in all my years on this seat... Have I heard of such outrageous conduct? Your callous actions, your heinous, absolutely ruthless...
All right, you're sentencing the wrong guy. He's the district attorney. I tried to tell you. It's the DA you got there.
However, some new evidence has been introduced that might shed some new light on the case before me.
Oh, you'll never get out of this, Arthur.
Waldo Vincent, you stand before me a convicted man. A man about to be sent to the reformatory. And yet, it's my belief that the scales of justice are tipping your way.
No, it'll never work.
A few minutes ago, you were about to go to prison, but looking at you, I wonder. I wonder if jail is really the answer for you. Oh, I'm not condoning what you've done, mind you. Manslaughter can be serious sometimes.
You said it, Arthur.
So, keeping that in mind, you seem like a very decent chap. Now, Waldo, we've all done things we're ashamed of.
Like you're doing now, Arthur.
So, I'm going to put it to you this way, Waldo Vincent. While the court cannot completely forgive the prisoner for his crime, I'm going to do all that's in my power...
Be careful now, Art.
...to ease the burden of your sentence. I believe the only way I can do that is to set you free, my good man.
Now, see, I tell you one more. Now, how are you going to stop the courtroom spectators from demonstrating?
And everybody in the court is hereby sentenced to 10 days in jail for snideness, contempt. Take them away, Bailey.
Oh, I'm going to hand it to you, all right?
This session of the Bob and Ray Unrehearsed Courtroom of the Air is now closed. Ace Willoughby, International Detective.
The world is my feet. My passport is nothing more than a ticket to trouble.
Senor Willoughby, good to see you again. What brings you down here?
Captain Otero, my client, in a certain matter, is a Mr. L.
Mr. L? But I thought he...
I know. So did everybody. Otero, would it surprise you to know that I have... Mr. L's key.
The key?
Surprises you, doesn't it? Well, it's this way. The key means a lot to a great many people. Mr. L wants to know who they are.
But how will you find them, Willoughby?
Taro, I'm not going to find them. They're going to find me. I've already started things. I'm registered at the Panama Hotel as Ace Willoughby, care of Mr. L, keeper of the key. I think the hotel clerk noticed it, too.
Willoughby, a word of caution. There are many who seek the key. Be careful.
Relax, Carlos. I can take care of myself. If anything comes up, I'm headed back to the hotel. And Carlos, you ought to take care of the flies around here.
Come right in, Willoughby. We've been waiting for you. No sudden moves, Willoughby. This gun is pointed right at your arm.
Well, it's quite a gang of you here. Maybe we should have a party.
The key, Willoughby. Where is it?
I never knew a crook who didn't want something.
The key.
What makes you think I'd be stupid enough to carry the key around with me?
We can find out in a hurry, Willoughby.
You crooks. If you fellows figure on roughing me up, just remember this. A guy who's unconscious... He's a guy who can't talk.
Swede, Larry, Frenchie, Herman, Tex, Willis, Laws, Steve, Dutch. Go get him.
Hey, remember what I told you about an unconscious man.
All right. Hold on. Enough. Back up and let me take a look at him.
Hey, he looks unconscious to me.
He is. Quickly. Spirits of ammonia.
What happened? Where am I?
Willoughby, a few minutes ago, you said unconscious men don't talk.
Well, if that's what I said, I meant it.
Do you know what's in this bottle?
What?
Spirits of ammonia. We can keep smashing you around the room and waking you up any time we feel like it.
Look, I'll make a deal with you guys. You can have the key when they shovel snow on the equator.
Swede, Larry... Frenchie.
All right. Here's the key. If I can't count on being unconscious, there's no sense in carrying out the charade at all.
Sure good sense, Willoughby. Elfita's in.
wise person in Spain once taught me that a man who overeats is a man who's had enough. Adios. Hi, and welcome again to Bob and Ray's Showbiz Corner. Today, an interview with a sick comic, a ventriloquist. Let's say hello to Eddie Ha-Ha Bostwick and his dummy, Eric.
Hi, Ray.
Eric is an unusual-looking dummy, Eddie. Is there a reason for that?
You mean the horn-rimmed glasses?
Well, that's part of it. And then there's the receding hairline, the shadows under his eyes. Well, you know, he looks altogether jaded.
I get lots of humor out of him with wry comments. Comedy hits much harder when a person isn't expecting it.
Where did you and Eric last work, Eddie?
Well, we appeared at a health club last week.
Gee, that's an unusual place for a ventriloquist to appear.
After we did our act, the people around the health club felt a lot better.
Well, they liked it, did they?
Well, nobody turned a hose on us, if that's what you mean. But we're not going back there. The atmosphere is too turgid.
You're what is known as a sick comic. Would you explain to our listeners what that means?
Well, it's hard to define. I'd say a sick comic is an artist who doesn't let humor stand in his way when he's appearing at a nightclub.
I guess you guys think it's more important to make an audience think, not laugh.
I got a laugh last week. It shook me.
Could we hear about it, Eddie?
Well, you see here where Eric's leg is a little bent.
Uh-huh.
Happened when he dropped off my knee about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, about this laugh I got.
Yeah.
While I was on stage, a guy from the audience hollered, "Hey, your dummy's got a broken leg."
And the laugh you got stems from your response to that observation?
Right. I shouted back, "I know he's got a broken leg. After the show, I'm going to take his arm off and use it as a splint."
Well, that was a swell comeback.
Oh, yeah. It was the man on the front table who laughed so hard surgery was required on his stomach.
Hey, Eddie, can you give our listeners a little sample of your comedy? Nothing much. I mean, just the open, maybe.
Well, the atmosphere here isn't oppressive enough, really.
Well, I shut all the doors and windows as soon as I heard you were coming.
Yeah, I thought I felt a little breeze like fresh air, you know.
Oh, no. So, will you do your regular opening?
Yeah, okay. Of course, a lot of the lines are a little dated now. It goes something like this. "Hey, Eric, you know why the lights dim down every night in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, why?
They dim because someone down there keeps switching on his electric golf cart.
Uh-huh.
Then I get into the meat of the thing with electric golf carts.
Yeah.
What a surprise it can be when people with wet hands turn on the switch.
Yeah.
And then
thank you for being with us, Eddie. Ha-ha, Bostwick. And thank you, too, Eric. And I'd like to express my gratitude to your manager, Florence Nightingale, for making it possible for you to appear here. Good night.
Welcome to the Bob and Ray Show. Do you know who that box of bonbons is for over there that came just before the show?
I think they're for me. I think they were sent in to me.
Well, is your name on them? Did you order them or what?
No, they were sent in from somebody who wanted to donate a little candy to them.
Why don't you pass them around to the rest of us?
Yes, what are you being so stingy about,
Well, Ray? It isn't that I care so much, but I'd like to see. It looks homemade.
They are homemade, but there's only about eight of them.
Well, there's only about six of us here.
Somebody's going to have to go
out.
Come
on, Webb. Let me have one.
No, come on. I'm going to bring them home.
Why don't you give them that?
Well, what do you mean? I got that.
All right.
Come on. Don't be fucking.
All right. The purple one.
No.
How about fresh of all of the bothers? Let you turn off time.
You look all right.
Please, it's just that you shouldn't be walking on the street looking like that.
For being it way off the track, you can walk on the street.
You forgot what they were arguing about in the first place.
I mean just that. You have a certain stature in this community.
All right, Mary, you always get back to this. Thanks, Wallace. Wallace, our Bob and Ray assistant, helped them out of the studio and thinks.
All right, now, audience, go!
There's Larry Midget getting the audience.
Going to height now, you big fellas.
Seated according to size. Perhaps you can hear him there in the rear.
Hey, what makes you think you're tall?
Well, I am.
Don't get into any arguments.
You're not tall enough. You're not friendly, are you?
Remember, politeness counts, sir.
Give it a drink, Bob.
Okay.
Well, I think
they're pretty well in their positions now.
I've never in my life come to a show have a person like that talk to you.
Well,
that
I'm sorry, ma'am. It's just for so everyone can see better.
Don't cause any trouble. It's going to be all right. Just sit there.
That's your sister? Uh-huh.
Nice to have all of you people here today, and I suppose you'd like to see a little entertainment now that you came.
School teachers.
Oh, good. Yeah. What do you teach, ma'am?
Arithmetic.
What grade?
Fourth grade.
Fourth grade, arithmetic. That's about as far as I took arithmetic, I think.
Well, right after that, you start your fractions.
Mm-hmm. Well, nice to have you with us.
Denominators, numerators.
Both you and your sister.
Don't make any trouble.
She's not making any trouble. She didn't say a word.
Well, I'm afraid she'll get into trouble. We don't want any trouble.
You won't be in any
I'm
trouble.
I'm so here. Afraid. She has one little before dinner, honestly.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Well,
I'm not getting into any trouble.
She's not. Are you twins?
Well, I'm a little older. No, I'm a year older, but we do look quite a bit alike.
Yes, you do.
Why don't they dry up, Bob?
I wish they would.
Suddenly
the rest of the audience is getting uneasy.
Entire program, my word.
Land of Goshen, I think we're just going to have to put our foot down on having audiences in the studio while we do these vignettes. Now there's no time for Hilaire and his minor birds. What's the word on Ward Stuffer, our roving critic, do you know?
He's in London, England. I talked to him on the phone 3 days ago. He's there getting some information about why a few of Britain's young men are so angry.
Oh, yeah?
And he put some of the information on tape and is being flown here on a biplane.
You chaps, Bob and Ray?
Yes. I believe you have a tape recording for us.
Yes, I do. Here you are.
Thank you. Incidentally, did you have any trouble flying the Atlantic in that open cockpit biplane?
Not much, fellas. The weather was first rate all the way, with the exception of a few tricky moments over the Azores when the sun came out and faded my aircraft rather badly.
Mm.
The rest of the trip was without incident. Bye, gentlemen.
Crazy kid.
Well, let's hear what Ward Stuffer has to say. Would you hold? You put that tape right on, and let's hear it.
Hello, this is Ward Stuffer, talking to you from the Baskerville Theater in London. Standing at my side is Basil Schwerin, playwright and angry young man. He's brought me here to the theater where his play opened tonight. And in just a moment, we're going to find out why Basil Schwerin is angry.
Get off my foot, Stuffer.
Well, that's only part of the reason he's angry. He's asked me to interview Sir Conrad Snipes, the actor who took the leading role in his play, so we could get to the real source of Mr. Schwerin's anger.
Get on with it, Stuffer. Talk to Sir Conrad and be quick about it.
All right, Basil. Sir Conrad, I suppose you're anxiously awaiting the reviews on tonight's play. Sir Conrad, I didn't completely understand what you said. I think it's the electric fan overhead. Now, let's move over to the
stop the twaddle, Stuffer. That's the way the man talks. It's the way he sounded on stage tonight.
Is that true, Sir Conrad?
Sir Conrad. Now do you see why we're angry, Stuffer? All the actors over here sound this way all the time. I don't even know why they bother to open the box office. And as for you, Sir Conrad, you deserve to be horsewhipped.
Let's not lose our heads here. I came here to get at the truth. Basil, for all I know, the play you wrote might be a bad one. And that's what I wanted to hear from Sir Conrad, whether he thinks the play is good or bad.
You'll get nothing intelligible out of that, ninny. What he deserves is a rather sound battering about the head and ears.
Calm down, Basil. Now, Sir Conrad, do you understand what I'm saying? All right, Sir Conrad, I'd prefer that you answer by blinking your eyes. One blink for yes, two blinks for no. Have you got that?
A dirty beggar blinked one time. He understands. He's cunning, all right.
Good. Now, Sir Conrad, the play that Mr. Schwerin wrote, do you think it's a good one? Along with whatever it is you're saying, Sir Conrad, you blinked your eyes twice, which means you thought the play a bad one. Now I see you're also raising your hand, making a fist, and Basil Schwerin and Sir Conrad Snipes are having, if they stay over here, a good go at it.
Claude, put nameless old man.
This is Ward Stuffer at the Basketball Theater in London, England. Just heard from an angry young man and an angry older one, too. For my wins and honors rearranged by flying canes, night to you all.
Okay, you can cut the tape. Thank you for the report from Ward Stuffer on the situation in the theater in England at the moment. Now, By now, we were going into the studio audience, but I don't think we'll have to select an interesting guest, because that man down there, the one on stilts, looks as though he might have something to say.
Let's get him up here. Come on.
Sir, on the stilts there, would you come up to our Bob and Ray microphone, please?
Well, I thought you'd notice me. Hey, I think I'd like to come up.
Take you very long to get up here, do you think?
Well, if I don't hit the ceiling.
That'd be a good idea if you took off your top hat there.
Okay, will do.
Keep an eye on the Bob and Ray small man on your way up. He turns vicious about height, you know.
All right. Do you think you'd try anything nasty with a man wearing a...
Uncle Sam outfits don't mean a thing to him, so watch yourself.
I'll let you alone this time, buddy, because of the uniform, but that's all.
Well, I'm surprised he's going to let you by there. Must be a case of patriotism, being the last refuge of the scoundrel, I guess.
Well.
Sit down, you. Well, you can't sit down, Bert.
Glad to be here, Mr. Elliott. Joey Belknap's the name.
What's the reason for the stilts, Joey?
Well, I wear them to attract attention. See, what I want to do is attract the attention of a certain group, namely Tin Pan Alley.
Well, most musicians I know wouldn't notice a man on stilts. Why do you want to be noticed by Tin Pan Alleyites?
Well, you see, I've written a song, and it's kind of hops. It's a hoppity-hippity song, and I can't get in to see the big guns at the recording company, so I thought wearing stilts would open a lot of doors for
me. Well, even if it did, how could you get through the doors wearing stilts?
You may be kidding, but that's a real problem.
Sure.
Like, I got a break yesterday, and I almost couldn't capitalize on
it. What happened?
Well, the way I work it, I walk up and down Tin Pan Alley, see, and chant, I've written a song, I've written a song, give an unknown songwriter a break, look at what he's written at least, look at what he's written.
That's kind of a long chant there, Joey, isn't it?
Well, a stunt like this is no good without lots of production.
Well, any of the recording executives noticed you?
Yeah, Waxy Monroe of Dizzy Records passed by and threw up his card and asked me to come up to his office.
Well, I suppose you got rid of those sticks you're standing on in a big hurry, didn't you?
That's right. I got rid of the stilts, but when I did, the trouser legs of my Uncle Sam pants bunched up at the bottom. Give me a devil of a time.
Did you fall down or what?
All over the street. In a way, it was hilarious, you know.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, my floundering around attracted more attention than the actual stilt walk.
Well, did it get you what you wanted, Joy? Did you get to see Waxy Monroe of Dizzy Records?
Oh, yeah.
What'd he say?
Well, he congratulated me on having a lot of enterprise, and then he told me to beat it because he was busy.
Well, Joey, I hope you're not going to give up the idea of staging unusual stunts to sell your song.
I only got a few more ideas.
Well, keep us posted. Get a lot of showmanship there, and we'd all like to know how you make out. I'd like to follow your story up in the weeks to come. We'll see you soon, and you can come back to the office. Careful that top step.
I fell.
Well, the horse show is going on, and we've dispatched correspondents Wally Blue and Artie Skirmahorn, Bob and Ray's private communicators, to that historic event. So come in, Wally Blue, please.
Wally Blue, speaking from the horse show with Artie Skirmahorn at his vantage point. So far, some amazing exhibits of equestrianism. And, Artie, you've got a better view. I'm backstage where I can't see much of anything, but if you can hear me, come in.
Norton, and I can see very well here, Wally. They've just concluded the famous dance where the horses have gone around and danced to a tango tempo. Standing beside me is a man in jumpers, wearing a tall silk hat, and looks to me like a pair of discarded army shoes, sir.
That's right.
Tell us just what's going on here at the horse show at this moment.
Well, they're going through the various different maneuvers, which of course make up the standard horse show, the various jumps, the obstacle courses.
Will there be an obedience test here today, sir?
Yes, we'll have an obedience test later this afternoon, I believe.
I see.
I haven't got the schedule here with me right now, but I'm sure that all lovers of horse flesh will be able to take that part of the show in, too.
All right, what is the thing there? What is they call that event when the horses carry around it looks like a small sulky of some sort and there's a rider on there? Just what is that event?
Well, they usually call it a flop because it doesn't get too much attention.
I see. It's been very interesting talking to you, sir. Are you an official here?
No, I was just over there back of the corral cleaning up.
On this happy note, then, here at the Horse Show, this is Artie Skimmelhorn returning you to... Say, Tex, I see you here today with your 45.
That's right. I was asked earlier in the week to come over and give a demonstration of trick shooting.
That's a six shooter, though, isn't it, actually?
Yeah, but I got my assistant over there is going to hand me different ones, loaded ones.
Okay, now, we have set up the studio so that you can give a real good marksmanship display here. We know we've kidded you a good many times about...
Well, that's right, but I think now I'm going to be able to show you once and for all that we cowboys do know how to shoot, even in this day and age.
Well, you go right ahead, and I'll try to describe what he's doing. He has, what is that thing? It looks like a bell in the middle of it that you...
Well, it's a barrel target. That's, oh. And it's suspended up there.
And it's a bell so that it'll ring, you know you've hit it. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, well, go ahead, Tex, and lots of luck.
Right, I'll just step over here. And all right. Anytime you're ready.
We're all set. The microphones are on. Good luck. Oh, you missed that time, I guess. What happened there?
Something happened. I don't know if that was the... I'll try it again. I'm not...
All right.
There, that's three in a row.
I'll try.
Still one extra there someplace, though.
Well, keep going. Do you need any more bullets in that thing?
There it is. Yeah, let me have another pistol here.
All right.
I'm all loaded up. This is going to be a little more difficult. I'm going to throw plates up in the air. And,
oh, I see. All right.
Here goes the first one. I missed it, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. Completely.
I'll try another one. What happened to it?
I don't know. He threw a plate up. Oh, there it is. All right.
Try one. That's all the plates I got. I didn't want to use them.
Well, try the bell again. That's...
All right.
Well, Tex has proven conclusively that he is certainly a marksman of repute. And it's very happy, if there were a happy Bob and Ray to make this announcement.
Next week I'll do some rope tricks.
All right. Thank you.
And it's book review time. Now, I wish Kip were here because Webley Webster is all set to give us a review of a book that he's read the past week and have the Webster players act out one of the most famous scenes in it. Web, you all ready?
Yes, I am, Bob and Ray, and hello again, everybody. Well, this week I spent my spare time reading a classic that I think is a pig.
A real classic one.
Written by Louisa May Alcott.
Yes.
And there's the title, Little Woman.
Little Women.
That's
well,
right.
One that,
and it's about a bunch of little girls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good story. It's heartwarming. And yet it's thrilling. The Webley Webster players have come along today.
Now, just one thing.
Right.
Before you get to them, they've been here for the past 3 or 4 weeks, and we've had nothing but a repetition of the same scene from all these different
the
books.
The scene that we will portray for you takes place upon a boat. That's about 4 days out to sea.
Now, look.
And this is from Little Women,
anything.
About the middle chapter. And now the Webley Webster players are all set
Good
to go.
Hey, matey.
Hi,
my captain. What brings you by the pilot house?
I just came up from the mess, captain.
Why?
Oh.
Oh. Oh. Get up off the deck, matey, and keep a civil tongue in your head.
Begging your pardon, captain. I merely wanted to inform...
Belay, matey. You're listening to the captain now.
Aye, aye, sir. What can I be doing for you?
Why?
Oh.
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 Now then, matey, you know I don't like that kind of talk from ye.
But, captain, I only said I went below to the mess, that's all.
Why? You.
Oh.
Now then, which way is this old tub heading, matey?
We're heading directly for the horizon, captain.
Why?
Oh. Oh.
So you can see that along with the heartwarming parts, there's a lot of action and adventure in Little Women.
Where do they come in? There's nothing to do with Little Women.
You look for it at your bookstore. It's going to be all right.
couple of days ago, I discovered I had a short in my electric watch, and I wanted to know what time it was, so I picked up the phone and dialed the number, which gives you that information. Tape recorder was running, of course. And here is a recording of the very nice lady operator who answered.
Pepitone, the team exactly will be 12:20 trip and set it Wiggins.
Peep.
At 12, Tom will be exactly 20 decades and times 30.
Peep.
At the 2, the exact tone will be 12:22 times and assorted seconds.
Peep.
Well, she went on and on like that, and needless to say, I was quite taken with her delivery. She's here with me now as our guest, and I believe you said your name was Bonnie Bonwell, is that right?
That's right, Mr. Elliott. And I'm from Beatrice, Nebraska, born and brought up there.
I understand, and with good reason, too, that you're no longer a time signal lady with the phone company.
No, I was permanently relieved of my duties there after a very short stay from 12 noon on Wednesday to approximately 12:30 p.m. of the same day.
Well, why did you make so many mistakes reading a simple thing like a time signal over the phone?
Well, it was my first job in the big city, and with several hundred people calling and listening at the same time, I got a little nervous and fluttery.
I suppose that's too bad. What did you do before your job with the phone company?
I worked as a lady tobacco auctioneer in South Carolina.
Well, why'd you leave that job?
Well, I didn't exactly leave that one either. There again, the crowds and the excitement and the auctions all upset me, and I made a few mistakes in the prices, thereby losing a small fortune for my employer.
Mm-hmm.
That job lasted about half a day.
Well, now, have you had any other jobs that you've held for any length of time?
Well, before that, I announced train departures at a large Midwestern rail terminal. But there also the crowds flustered me, and because of the confusion that followed my first garbled announcements, I was fired summarily.
Well, tell me now, why does somebody who's as nervous as you obviously are, why do you take jobs that require you to speak publicly?
Well, the reason is, Mr. Elliott, that I'm just wild about show business, and I just can't help myself.
Well, I like to encourage new performers, and I hope you make good, Bonnie. I want to thank you for coming up and telling your story on the air from coast to coast.
On the air?
Yeah.
I thought I was peopling a job into vain to treble and chat.
Bonnie Bonwell, ladies and gentlemen.